I am unashamed. What about you?
So welcome back to Unashamed. I'm still down here at the Southern Lair. I'm looking at the image of Jason Dad there. There's a plate of what looks like either cookies or biscuits. I can't quite make it out, but I'm glad that my fatty liver and myself are here in Gulf Shores, Alabama, not there, because whatever's on that plate is looking mighty fine about this time of the morning, Jason.
No,
I don't know what you have there.
What, as my brother Willie would say, what had happened was a few podcasts ago, I brought up the it's hard for me to find a word to describe the vintage coconut macaroon, but I had discovered some, in case people missed this podcast, because it was quite a few ago, I discovered some at a Dollar General in Tennessee.
Yeah, you were actually remote on that podcast from Nashville, as I recall.
Okay, well, maybe that was it. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you had discovered it, and you had been in the parking lot, and actually, as I recall, you went back in.
Oh, I went back in. I made Missy stop the car, and Kay was with us. When we had the baby blessing for my new grandson, and I had to stop the car a moment, and I had to go back in because I bought one package because I haven't had a vintage coconut macaroon for years. What became funny, after I told the story is because I stopped the car, went in, and I didn't clear the rack. I left one package for a friend because I felt bad about because it was a full rack. And I had them all, and then I moved one. I said, no, my grandma said always leave a plate for a stranger.
For the stranger.
And so I just took my hand and just took all the packages off and then I dumped them on the right in front of the cash register.
Jace, you know what they call? There's a name for that. It's called the rack rake.
So I did a rack rake, and so also what I did was, I didn't share this part, but the guy working behind the counter, he had a strange look because I had just had the transaction with one bag. I left the store. I now come back. It was almost like he was looking like, is he doing something illegal? Or because it seemed weird.
Yeah.
And I said, they were that good. And I said, but I left one package back there if you want to try it. I said, or you can just wait for a customer. But if I were you, I would go take that. It's a dollar. But anyway. So I tell that story, and so Al, your daughter, and I had no idea this was going to happen. I showed up and saw this plate on what seems to be coconut macaroons, but my first thought was, because your daughter, she made these. She didn't buy these in a store.
Oh, these are homemade.
These are homemade. So
I'd like to try one on the way out.
From Al's daughter Alex, and who's a bit of a chef herself.
Yeah, she's a pastry chef.
And so now she knows in our family it's okay to have constructive criticism. So I have never tasted what I'm fixing to taste. We're going to do a taste test, but there's also another storyline that has emerged here, because when I shared that story in Tennessee, well, Phil had, for some reason, has displaced the memory of the coconut macaroon, because he was like, I don't even know if I've ever had one. But you introduced these to me when I was a kid. They used to come in a different package, and they were a lot bigger than this, a lot flatter. Now, the ones I got in Dollar General actually looked like a little smaller version of this.
Right.
But so we want to try to jog your memory. You don't remember these, Ben?
No.
I feel like we're doing some kind
of. I was the same way. So, Jace, you were in Tennessee when you were telling us this. And then I look over at Dad. I was in your chair. And I said, yeah, Dad, you know, Dad, you remember coconut macaroons? Dad said, a macaroon, what? And
Phil, you introduced this to our family.
His love for the macaroons is why we fell in love with the
macaroons. Now, we're going back 40 years.
Oh, well, I know.
Way back.
You know, yeah. I don't know why I wouldn't have thought of that.
Well, Phil, I've never forgotten them because once I tasted one.
But you remember 40 years ago when you got into the macaroons?
So, Jay's, since another storyline, since you talked about it on the podcast, because Unashamed Nation is right with us, so I've gotten many pictures and of boxes of things from everywhere, Cracker Barrel. Yeah. So a lot of Unashamed Nation. So I had to do a little research myself. There's a difference between the macaron 1-0 and the macaroon.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten a bunch of pictures of the macaron, which is the little flat cookie.
That is not what if it's hard, if there's a that's not what we're discussing. Yeah. The coconut macaroon is
this
soft.
This demands the grinding of the teeth.
No, this is soft.
Oh, yeah.
And chewy.
And fluffy. And there's some moisture in the, it's not a cookie. It's more like a coconut cake that has been baked, but it has a softness to it.
Hmm.
So I'm going in. Oh, and it's soft to the touch. That's the first thing I want to, and I just grabbed one, and it has the right texture for the coconut macaroon.
Yeah, you gotta have two.
I'm going in here. I don't know if I don't know if this is planned, but I am fixing to take this is a which I'm stunned that Phil. I would like for you to try one just to sit. Well, Phil. For you who are listening, I was going to bite. Phil put the entire, this is the size of a golf ball, and Phil put the whole thing in his mouth. Just, he will not be able to talk, I would say, for the next 2 minutes.
I'm going to have to admit, you did that.
I want to simultaneously try it.
That's a thumbs up for Dad.
That is really good.
Oh, wow. Al, you talk amongst yourself for a second.
I'll say this while they're chewing. So Alan from Tennessee, and I met Alan at an event. So he sent me the picture of the macaron. Alan, no good. And it's got the feminine packaging from Cracker Barrel.
No crunch to it at all. Soft.
No, it's chewy. It's soft and chewy. That's what you want in the macaroon.
Did you use fresh coconut?
It's unsweetened coconut.
Unsweetened coconut,
fresh coconut.
Makes sense.
And I don't know if Mom ever made them homemade, but I remember she probably did because I remember eating them a lot when we were younger. Now that we've jogged Dad's memory, Dad used to love them.
Yeah.
And Mom used to buy them everywhere.
Well, I see why now. They're really good.
Does that not – that doesn't jog your memory?
It's the first time I've tasted it 40 years ago, so
– Right here on Unashamed, we have gone back into the reaches of Dad's mind to bring forward the coconut macaroon, which is a fantastic dessert. They're really, really good.
Excellent. Excellent job. I have no criticism to do that because that would seem like that would be hard to do. And I think I think they would have a tendency to dry out. And so I would think as soon the quicker you eat this, as a famous person once said, after a meal was prepared, I love saying this, I've said it many times, the longer it sits there, the worse it gets. Do you know who said that?
Who's that?
You. So it was one of the greater lines that I've ever heard. And I will have to admit, my wife does not like it when I say that. But Al, I actually said it at the.
You said it on Easter Sunday?
On Easter Sunday, I threw you and Lisa under the bus because y'all had preached and couldn't get out of there. Mm. And we waited. They said it was going to be 20 minutes, but it was more like 40 for them to cook the macaroni and cheese.
Waiting on the mac and cheese.
Finally, just looked around and said what everybody was thinking. The longer this sits here, the worse it gets.
Which was a fail line from
But it didn't work. We actually had to wait. No, I think you've hit it. You've captured that, so I'll need to get that recipe. And So for those of you, because now here was the disturbing part. Evidently, that the Dollar Generals, they don't necessarily all carry the same things.
Because they don't have it locally?
How long did you leave it in the oven to get it brown like that on?
Well, every gas station.
15 minutes.
Really? It took 15 minutes to make that?
So it's a pretty good dessert, ladies.
Well, I don't know why this hadn't made a comeback. I mean, now somebody did, and I bought some at Dollar General. But that is fantastic. Now, I will say there's one prerequisite to eating these that's pretty obvious, but I just want to throw this out here. You must love coconut. If you don't, because like my wife, she doesn't like the texture of coconut for some reason.
Coconut is one of those things that people either love it or hate it. I mean, there's no in between.
Wow, that's right up our alley.
Yeah,
it is. I tend to get that view just toward basic humanity on their feelings toward me.
That's right. That's right. It's like Jay's on the podcast. You love him or you hate him. Yep. No, but it's something about a texture thing, and I've always loved coconut, but people that don't love it, it's a texture problem. It's like me and crunchy vegetables. I don't like raw vegetables.
But see, I love that, Al, because like Missy, when I bought those whatever many bags it was, I didn't have to worry about her.
Yeah.
You know?
Because she wouldn't go eat it.
Miss Kay, she said, let me try one of those, you know. And she had Lynn there. Lynn said, let me try one of those. And so then they ate one. And then I noticed their hands came out. And so I was like, look, I'm going to give y'all one of these bags to y'all work it out. And so I donated that to the cause.
That's really good. That's worth cooking.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So from start to finish, 15, 20 minutes.
I was nervous for you because I am a high critic. I'm a food snob. I'm not denying all this. But that was fantastic. You captured the essence of the coconut macaroon. And so, yes, it was fantastic.
So I looked it up. I think both the macaroon and the macaron, and Alex may know more than me, but both have a French origin, which most desserts are of European origin, which makes sense because so are we. Americans come from Europe as well, but they both come from there, but they're both obviously made quite differently. But this particular dessert is of a chewy, soft.
Yeah,
that's the one
that
you
was
want.
It.
You don't want the hard crunchy.
Those of you, the 10% who watch this instead of just listen, I will not be doing the macaruna because that was a dance that I invented after 20 to 30 years. I can't remember the last time I had a soft coconut macaroon, but it caused a dance that I couldn't help. When I walked out of the Dollar General,
you were dancing.
And Missy said, what are you doing? And I said, it's called the macaruna. And so I literally was dancing in public, and I'm not sure the exact moves, so I will not be doing that today. But I just couldn't help it in the moment. So I'm glad this is back.
Probably there's a lot of coconut, buffs out there now.
Yeah, I am. I love coconut.
Yeah, there's people love coconut.
So just for a little teaser, and today's a perfect time to mention this, that some point later this year, we're talking about adding a couple of segments into the podcast. One of those is a little cooking segment with Alex. And so today was a good little tester for y'all, but we're talking about maybe doing a little thing where we introduce her cooking something for us from time to time and us trying it. So we may introduce that later on the podcast. And also Maddie, who we talk about quite a bit, who is our producer, is getting married in May. And so we're excited about that. And so we may have a little Marriage Matters with Maddie, where we talk about marriage, because we have a lot of other young people who are getting married and just married. And so we may do that as well later. So just a couple ideas that we'll kick out there for Unashamed Nation to chew on. All right, so Dace, you ready to get into Luke, or do you have
I had a thought. Since we're doing experimentation today, I had another thought. And so I think this is a synopsis of our last two podcasts when we did the introduction to Luke, which was basically, I don't know what you would call that, a dissertation on Luke 1, one through four. And
yeah, kind of a setup for the book.
And we did pick out the parts in Luke 24 where Luke seemed to, you know, be quoting Jesus over and over again, where the idea of Jesus being the fulfillment of everything that was written in the law and the prophets. And so we did a dissertation on that. And so what I thought, I just had this thought, you know, why is the Bible called the Bible? Have you ever thought about that, Al? Where did that come from?
Why is the Bible called the Bible?
I think it's a good question.
That's a great question.
Never thought about it.
Really?
I never thought about it.
Never thought about the word Bible, because I don't know of any other entity that uses that word.
No, I know. You know, so that's why I thought about it. So it hit me, because now look, my first thought I'm waiting to reveal, because I don't think
the word Bible is in the word is in the Bible.
No, it's not. But why is it called the Bible? Well, the Greek word, the Greek word for Bible, biblio, means, you want to take a guess?
The truth.
Book.
Book.
Book. And so Bible, if the Latin, that from the Latin version of the Greek word biblio, means book of books.
It is interesting. Yeah. That mankind, with the stunts they pull, it is worthy of note that the word Bible has stayed Bible for the last 2,000 years at least.
So what I was
going to probably going all the way back to the Old Testament.
So what I was going to propose.
No one ever called anything else the Bible that I know of.
Well, I think people use it as nowadays they'll say that is the Bible of, it's the Bible. Like somebody will write a book on, let's just, I don't know off the top of my head.
Cooking.
Cooking. And then the best book on cooking that people say, they'll say it's the Bible of cooking.
Yeah,
they do use that as an illustration.
I've heard that before.
Which only supports the Bible. So.
Final word.
So what I was going to interject, you know, I have these strange thoughts, most of them in the middle of the night. And so I had this one. I didn't look at what time it was last night when I had this thought, but I woke up in the middle of the night. And I wish we would put under the word Bible the true story of Jesus. Because I noticed something about me. I like movies. Most of the movies I watch are true stories. So if I'm looking at a movie, you know, Missy and I have a movie night like, you know, once every couple weeks. And so I'm looking for true stories. I want to watch things that actually happen. I'm kind of, maybe it's my age. I don't know. I'm past the, you know.
Well, I will, to help your feelings a little bit.
Yeah.
As compared to what is run on various outlets of all kinds, movies, this and that and other. In other words, it's pretty refreshing that something, you know, most people, their hand is moving. They're nervous if they're going to start reading the Bible and do what it says. You know, they'll say, I think I'll go get my Bible. No, you. You've crossed a threshold when you say, I think I have time for my Bible reading.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah.
I don't know why that's funny, but that strikes me. But, well, it's like, but Phil, I think
it's the only book with this much information. And if somebody, it's his behavior, their behavior, that keeps them from reading it.
Well, I think the reason I thought that was funny is, I think we've changed in our culture. You know, we just, our last podcast, when we interviewed the writer of the movie, Nefarious, you know, he was kind of saying we need to get back to that Bible preaching. Because, I mean, look, and I'd say 50 years ago, most people sitting in church, when the preacher gets up and starts reading from the Bible, they got nervous. But I don't think people get nervous much anymore. I think there's been a watering down you know, of the scriptures and the and just the vital nature of the spiritual warfare, to your point. So maybe that's why that was funny. But I had this thought in the middle of the night that I wish under the word Bible, because I had a theory that if I asked y'all where the Bible came from, that you wouldn't know, because it was something I hadn't really thought about either.
It's mentioned the word of God.
Yeah, what I'm saying, I wish they would put under the Bible, this was my thought I had in the middle of the night, the true story of Jesus. I just think that would give people right off the bat the point of what this is going to reveal.
I use terminology like, why would God take the time to have four different individuals, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? Why would he take the time to let four different men tell the same story in their words? They all say there's way more than this that you don't read about that we didn't put in here.
John 21.
The reason he used four different men is so that you can't miss it. You read each one what they had to say, the same story. I think that's why he said, let me let four people. And what you say you wish your Bible was is the truth.
The true story of Jesus.
If four people write down a story.
But Phil, 41 people wrote books in the Bible. And my point is, the ones, based on what we read in Luke 24, if Jesus was the fulfillment of those scriptures, it was actually the Genesis to Malachi said, look, Jesus is coming. You hear the story,
it's
the true story.
It's harder to dream it up. Which you can't dream it up. You have to take it for what it is. But if you have four people writing this about the same event, the truth about Jesus, whatever you're talking about that, you say, if you had four people write down and the story jives with each other, and that's almost impossible for four people.
Well, how about 41? I'm not sure why you're just saying four. 41. Four wrote about Jesus's life here, but
because the importance of the topic is the final roundup, when Jesus comes down and it's called the good news, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Good news.
I get it, but I'm saying the Old Testament pointed to Jesus coming, which to me, combine that with the four men that you're referring to writing when he fulfilled, when he was here. Then you have all those letters to churches who have now put their faith and trust in the one.
And Jesus said what these words are about. I have to be fulfill everything that's been said about me. He went back thousands of years.
Right. That's my point. So that's why I'm saying, what do y'all think about? I've never heard that idea.
Most people, the first time it was ever called the Holy Bible, which I guess if you were looking back to original terms, would have been a set apart book of books. If you were going by holy, which means set apart, biblio, the book or book of books, was when the authorized King James came out in 1600, was the first time I think they actually put the Holy Bible stamped on the book itself, was when the King James Version of the Bible came out. So I guess what we would call the Holy Bible, I think that's right.
And how long was it for it to get there in print? 1600, that's 700 years since all these events happened that Matthew, right. Mark, Luke, and John are pointing to. Jesus, what he said, you know, what he did. You know, it took seems like that's a pretty long wait, but the Almighty figured out, you know, give it time. So, you know, in other words, what were they reading? How many copies were available, you know, 2,000 years ago? That still leaves you 2,300 and something in there between there and the time Jesus was there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I mean, hardly any. Yeah, it wasn't easily available till much later for people, because these are just being, you know, these were letters, you know, they had to be compiled. So they
it's
didn't
hard
kind of
for
put
any
it all
book to reach the entire world. That's difficult. Right. You know, a lot of people write books. I've written a few myself, but worldwide, I mean, it's a joke. So, but this went worldwide, and I mean, that's in poor countries, but there's copies of it now almost every place on the planet. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Well, the printing press obviously changed everything about that. So, Jace, what did you call it? What was your name? I like
your
name.
The True Story of Jesus.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to say, here's what I'm trying to say. This is not, and I'm basing this on, I mean, it's come out of Luke 1:1-4. Because he said, many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled, you know, among, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word, you know, which Jesus called himself the word. The word became flesh. But even the words that predicted Jesus are all wrapped up in the Bible. So, he is the communication of God, someone said, and I agree with that. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good also to me to write an orderly account so that you, to Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. So he's saying this is the true story of Jesus. Now he's going to, you know, prove that. You throw in what John says, you know, Jesus came full of grace and truth. You know, in the beginning, he was the word. It's the same. They all, like you said, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, it is a four-pronged perspective that says very much the same thing. This is the true story of Jesus. That's why when you get to the end of all four letters, they capture the same actions.
And four different writers will tell the story.
They tell the story. So, and everything that was, that led up to this point was to bring Jesus on the earth to be, in essence, the bridge of God and man, because he was God and man. And by his death and resurrection, he brought God and man back together.
And you have to agree, the four accounts, and what they said to this day boggles the mind, Jace. It boggles the mind.
Anyway, I mean, maybe y'all think I'm crazy. It was an idea. I thought, because I'm going to large crowds of people and I'm speaking, and a lot of people do not know what the Bible is about. They think it's a rule book. They think it's fairy tales. They think it's a legend. They think it's a compilation of myths. They don't know the point of the Bible. And I was just trying to put that, you know how people, they'll put a title and then they'll kind of sum it up. And I just thought, and people don't even know why it's called the Bible. We didn't know it and we studied it.
But you came up with the idea, the first part, for 3,000-4,000 years at least, is Jesus is coming.
He's coming. That's what I'm saying.
And then from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Luke is saying here.
He's here. This is what happened.
He's here.
And he's coming back.
And he's coming back.
Coming back.
That's covered.
So this is the true story of Jesus. This is where he was, what he did, and where he is now, what he's doing now. It's all wrapped up in, it's the true story of Jesus. And you will conclude at the end of the book that Jesus is alive and well, and he is at the right hand of God, and he is coming back. I mean, this is the revelation of Jesus, and it's true.
Yeah.
This is based on eyewitnesses.
Oh, it's a mystery discovered and identified and explained. The mystery of the gospel. Yeah.
So let's push this through.
I agree, and agree also that even from Genesis to Malachi, as we talked about in the last podcast that we talked about Luke, is basically once we studied Hebrews, if you take Hebrews and compare it to the entire Old Testament, as we talked about, it's just basically about Jesus in preparation of him coming. I mean, the whole thing. Yeah. So once you understand that, it takes out a lot of the mystery of the Old Testament, like, oh, what is all this history and these kings and the prophets and the...
Well, that's where I was getting. I think people would hang on a little longer. They're like, well, this is the true story of Jesus is how, you know, God himself chose to be revealed to us. So every word...
But I wouldn't want to question God about how much information he would allow and how he would, where he would put the information and how he would put it. Jesus is coming. Jesus is here.
Yeah, but we put Bible on there. Somebody put that. I don't even know who put that on there. I'm like, if we're going to put something on there, well, if King James put the word Bible, I'm saying, why not put the true story of Jesus?
Yep.
Yeah.
The
fair point.
The, because there's no other book like the Bible. It is the book of the Bibles. So the is an important word. Story, because it is a story. He's given an account. That's when you look up, when he said many have undertaken to draw up an account, the story of the things that have been fulfilled. It is a story.
Yep.
This is what happened. There was a garden, and, you know, I'm going all the way back.
Yeah, and it's carefully tied into whatever happened in the past. It's carefully.
Exactly. It's not a rule book.
No.
Now, there are rules and teachings in it, but it's a story that's true, and it's about Jesus.
And you got phrases that prove it. The light we went through, I am, the light of the world. You know, he's the final word on everything. I mean,
all right. And what is darkness? It's where
in the beginning
no light.
Was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. You know,
who's the Word? Yeah. Oh, it's Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, we got bogged down in that. I didn't know we was going to have that big a problem. I mean,
no, I think it's really good. Let's take another break. No, and I liked adding the word true because there's been so many untrue stories about Jesus. So I would add the word true story.
Yeah. Well, this is like history. You know, that's right. What I'm saying. That's Luke's
point. Yeah, people
point.
Who write about what the Bible says, and you're trying to get them to start with the story of Jesus, the true story of Jesus.
Yeah, true is has
everybody
to be
that
he said, I am the truth.
Yeah, and everybody that writes down an addition to what it says, you can start reading that. You're like, no.
And I think it would keep you from getting off of non-Jesus matters, which are a distraction. Which and are really of no use or value in anything, that's why I said a good question is, where's Jesus in this? How you view Jesus, every human being, is the greatest factor in what's going to affect your character and actions. Good or bad, right or wrong. If you look at him and say, you know, how many times have we said, who is the guy who coined the phrase? You either conclude when it comes to Jesus in your view, he was either a liar, a lunatic, or Lord. Now that was a great statement, because how else are you gonna, or a legend maybe?
Somebody,
legend.
One of the brothers wrote
a book.
With L.
Josh McDowell.
One wrote
that.
A book, and he said,
I thought it was C.S.
It would take more than a Jesus.
Well, maybe he did.
It would take more than a Jesus to invent a Jesus. One of the writers wrote a book, and one of the brothers up there.
Yeah.
It would take more than a Jesus to invent a Jesus.
That's kind of a deep thought.
I know it.
Yeah. How would you make this up? So look, we're the next part, you know, John the Baptist is foretold, which once again, now that we've gone in such detail about all the details that Luke fills up, and we brought that up in our overtime when we last did Luke, that he was a doctor, and doctors tend to be thorough. And so a lot of the details from, you know, naming one of the two guys on the road to Emmaus in Luke 24, you know, Cleopas. I mean, well, would he just make that up? Or, you know, and now you're going to make up a guy who John the Baptist, who's going to be the forerunner of Jesus, and he's going to look nothing like
a biblical scholar would look.
Nothing. That's what kills me.
Scholarship was way away from this one.
That's what frustrates me about the culture who just views the Bible as legends. And they say, oh, it's just a bunch of believers. They came up because they had an agenda. They're not coming up with a guy like John the Baptist, because I know he ran into the same problems that we run into. You know, and Phil, the story about the time you were going to speak somewhere, you're on the front row. I mean, you are the speaker. And what happened on the guy comes up and says, it gives you directions to the homeless shelter?
Yeah, he came up, and I was sitting there, their speaker, fixing to speak. And he said, listen, the homeless shelter is right around the first street down here on the left.
Yeah. He was serious. Meal.
He basically called you a bum, and you were not that he was not trying to help.
He was being very kind.
And I had to unveil that I was fixing to speak, and he was like stunned.
He was very embarrassed. But yeah, I mean, what's interesting is when you read the other accounts in Matthew, Mark, and John just sort of splashes onto the scene, and he's kind of seen as a renegade, and you know, we know the way he looks, and he's got a weird diet, and he's a lightning rod for people to listen to. And we know he's in the spirit of Elijah, but you don't really get any background. And it's really interesting to Jace's point. And Luke gives you the background. This guy had quite the pedigree, into Jewish, he goes all the way back to the priestly, back to Aaron in terms of his pedigree, you know.
So in verse 5, it says, in the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife, Elizabeth, was also a descendant of Aaron. So we're talking a solid couple here. Both of them.
And we're talking about back, and that's the beginning of the priesthood.
Yeah.
Just so you get the pedigree. I mean, Aaron was the original priest of Israel. So this is all the way back to the beginning with Moses.
Yeah. And feel free to explain that, because a lot of people, when you start reading about the priesthood of Aaron out, your eyes sink back in the back of your head.
Yeah. Just know that this is back to the original bloodline of priesthood. So John the Baptist's pedigree was the best.
So both of them, verse 6, were upright in the sight of God, which is always a positive. Observing all the Lord's commands and regulations blamelessly. Now, you know, probably because people read that, they're like, oh, were they perfect? But they were blameless in that these were solid people. They were getting it way more right than they were wrong.
And the group that they were with, the group was not that large.
Well, right. And I want to say this. The law taught us that we need Jesus. You know, what's James 2:10? So if you keep the whole law and yet stumble at one point, you're guilty of breaking all of it. But it doesn't mean they earned their salvation, or that was the whole problem. But the point is, these were as solid a people as you're going to come across.
You got to remember, they're going to need to be solid, because from that time on, over in Matthew, Luke says it too, about 3 or 4 times, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things. And here's his problem. At the hands of the elders, you're like, what? Elders are in the killing business now? Chief priests, they're out to kill Jesus. And teachers of the law, and they're out to kill me. That's who Jesus was up against. And that's why it does have a lot of meaning on the verse you just read. They observing all the Lord's care. This bunch wasn't after him.
No, they weren't. That's why he chose. Look, I think God chose just an ordinary, quiet couple and to do extraordinary things with the people who just day after day were serving him and quietly. And so not that they weren't being spokesmen, but I'm just saying, oh, these people come up and you're like, who are these people? I mean, there's no fanfare. Their hearts.
And that takes them away from the group that was out to kill him. You got two groups here of, of teachers of the law, the elders that are there. You got some good ones here.
All right. So verse 7, but they had no children because Elizabeth was barren and they were both well along in years. Once when Zechariah's division was on duty, he was serving as priest before God. Now, Al, you want to talk about what exactly that, so what would he be doing?
If you were interested, for those of you that are interested in that, if you would go to 1 Chronicles 24, you could do a deep dive. They would rotate through these different divisions to be on duty, and especially during high times, and that was one of these high times that's being described here, when you needed more priests because you had more people there to make sacrifice. So that's all I was talking about. All so, right. You know, he's rotating through. So just imagine like you had extra shifts if you were at a work situation. So that's what we're talking about.
So verse 9, he was chosen by lot, which I always find fascinating, which I wish we could bring back in some capacity.
We should. It's the ultimate in non-favoritism.
I said that before.
You need another elder. You need another disciple. Well, let's see. Let's
cast the lots.
Oh, Phil, when I was an intern in my short stint in the, what would we call it? The official capacity of religious workings, you know, 30 years ago.
I've had more than one.
I brought this up.
I said more than one want to get my title. And it's sometimes a little awkward.
Yeah. But what I said is, look, get the people to, submit the possible elders for the church. And I'm basing this on Acts 1. You remember when
they replaced Judas. Yeah.
Yeah. They replaced the apostles. Well, they drew lots to do it. I mean, they had a little pool of people. And I'm like, why don't we do that for the elders? I was quickly removed.
I think if you're doing the lots deal, if you got God's hand on it, you're going to come out.
But look, they got two qualified men. So it's not like they just didn't go out willy-nilly.
They got two qualified guys. I'm not saying open the Bible, you know, to a page and say, I was like, once you get all the people, then just cast lots. Let's just leave it, you know, up. They're like, what are you promoting, gambling? I'm like, they did this back there. Here's another case of where they did this. Of course, this was pre Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. So I don't know. So he was chosen by lot according to the custom of the priesthood to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And when the time for the burning of incense came, all the assembled worshipers were praying outside. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. Boy, I mean, this is quite the scene here. So when Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear.
Once again, another fearful angel sighting. Nobody was ever glad to see these guys, by the way.
No, and it's so crazy that you believe it. You know, here's a religious guy. He's a priest. He believes in God. He believes in angels. And all of a sudden, you see what you believe in.
and it's terrifying.
Absolutely. I use this illustration in my speeches about when Jesus comes back, you know, on how you're going to be. Because the 1 Thessalonians 5:4 says that this day shouldn't surprise you. Because I guarantee you, when people see Jesus come back, there's going to be a lot of fear, panic, and just even from people who are said believers.
That's right. Yeah.
So, and Al, you're right. So I think we need to think about the reality of this. You know, even when we talked about that movie, you know, The Nefarious and all, we have to really in our minds realize that there are spiritual forces of evil, and there are things that are supposed to be good, like rulers and authorities and all this stuff, that the evil world has taken over in some cases.
Ransacked. Yeah.
And even in some countries on this globe where there's just absolutely no presence of God, you know, and they're like spiritual dark force strongholds, you know. I mean, this is a reality, and I think we have to keep that on the forefront of our mind so we're not so shocked when things happen, you know. But
yeah,
I'm chasing a rabbit there. But still, so he startled, gripped with fear, but the angel said, don't be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Now, this is really a powerful moment when it comes to prayer, because they had prayed, you're assuming pretty much their whole lives that they could have a child, and it didn't happen. Yep. So, well, now that they're up in years, quotations, they've probably quit on that. I mean, well, it's because it's not physically possible. So you kind of sympathize for them,
yep.
But you watch how the Lord views this, because he says, your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to give him the name John.
So this is breaking news of epic proportion.
We have
for
breaking
them.
News from heaven that is literally slapped him in the face via an angel, said, hey, guess what? This ought to be a time of celebration. Your prayer that you prayed many a time has been heard and delivered. Of course, you know what he's thinking. Well, it's too late.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, John means Yahweh has been gracious.
Yeah, the Lord has been great. The Lord has been gracious. I actually wrote, I have very few notes, but one of them is John means the Lord is gracious, which is, I had the same idea. So he will be a joy and delight to you. So, I mean, not only are you going to, you know, have a baby, I mean, he's going to be a joy and a delight.
You usually don't tie once, because up to now, we don't have a visual of this.
Well, what?
The visual's not there. But they were talking about that the last person you would think was going to be what he's going to be would be John the Baptist, the one they prayed for and didn't get. Exactly. Boy, he came late, but boy, was he a doozy.
But watch what happened. So, verse 15, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. Well, I skipped a part. 14, he will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth. For he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even from birth.
Now, that's quite the...
Well, and I think because of the circumstances, and he was the forerunner of Jesus who just came from a virgin. Well, now we have John the Baptist coming from a couple, who a woman who couldn't have children, and I'm using couldn't have.
How old you think, Al?
I think too old.
Past yeah. Childbearing.
70, 80?
Well,
I can identify with it a little bit.
Yeah. So watch what happens. Many of the people of Israel will he bring back to the Lord their God, and he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah. And that was predicted, by the way, and we'll get into that later, to turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, and make ready a people prepared for the Lord. We'll talk about that later, because that's a hard thing to wrap your head around.
Yes,
but I just want to get the narrative that he lays out. Zechariah asked the angel, well, how can I be sure of this? Terrible question.
Bad.
Watch what happens. I am an old man, and my wife is well along in years. The angel answered, I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to tell you this good news. And now you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happened, because you did not believe my words, which will come true at the proper time.
All right. Man, you talking about a cliffhanger.
Never be surprised when the Lord answers your prayer, or you will get really quiet.
I call it the silent truth. What a cliffhanger.
I mean, we're laughing, but it was sad, you know.
It was really sad, because this was the greatest news, and now he couldn't tell a single soul about it. Because, you know, he questioned.
He might have said at some point, do you think?
Well, he didn't say anything for a while.
Well, I know, but he said to himself, that was a dumb move.
Okay. So we're going to discuss this more in our overtime, because we're literally out of time. We're hard against our time here. So starting the week of May 7th, we're not going to be releasing any more on Sundays. It's going to be Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I know a lot of you spend times with your families on Sundays, and so we're going to have all weekday releases. Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So look for that beginning the week of May 7th. So if you want to follow us over into overtime, we'll talk a little bit more about this, and we're going to have to flesh it out a little bit more in our next podcast as well, because we got a lot of stuff to unpack. This is really rich. So if you want to follow us, it's blazetv.com/unashamed. We'll see you in overtime.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.